Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 20th of October. Very nice to have you with us. Hope you all had a delightful weekend, and very nice to have us back assembled this morning. Let me introduce our panel to you, or at least what has shown up so far. And that would be WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Big Joe.
Good to have you here. And we welcome our political consultant, Libby Post. And it's been forever, my dear. It's wonderful to see you.
Thank you. It's been 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, pre-fund drive.
And the holidays.
And then our days didn't work out. And so it's wonderful to have you back.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm sure you have a lot bottled up, ready to go. And last but certainly not least, because she was here, she's been in the green room waiting very, very patiently. Making all that up.
Coffee.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. I just have to ask this question. So if a student walks in like 2 minutes past, do you give them a hard time, or you
no,
just let them sit down?
I respect cutting deadlines as short as possible.
Hey, that's good. Well, at least you're consistent on that.
How late can they be?
5 minutes.
And then what happens?
Well, then they get a demerit. They get some lip.
Some embarrassment.
I had a colleague who would lock the door.
Oh, see, yeah.
And mean it.
I want him to come.
Yeah, you never did.
That's how I feel.
You never did that.
Never.
He encourages attendance. You took attendance.
Oh, I took attendance.
Oh, yes.
I took attendance. And then I did a rolling commentary about where was so and so.
Yes, you did. I can attest to it.
It amazes me how many students don't come to class, which are expensive. You pay for them and then you don't come. I don't get it.
Well, if mama and papa are paying
right.
for it, it's different than if you're
money.
Paying for it. Well, which is why, in all honesty, and everybody in this room has been a teacher at some point, which is why returning or non-trad students who are paying for it themselves are always among the best.
Yes.
First of all, they've worked out most of the hormonal issues.
Right.
Secondly,
this is true. And they're serious, and they want something real for...
Right,
their money. They want to learn.
I believe in Israel. You got to go in the army before you go to college. So by the time they're done doing, or you got to push sand around in the Negev,
right,
in order to get
to
enough money
something.
To go to college.
Right,
so it's quite something.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
All right, let us get started, and we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you. At least one chapter of the Ebola saga near to close Sunday, as most of the dozens of people who had direct or indirect contact with Thomas Eric Duncan, the Liberian man who died of Ebola, had been told by officials they were no longer at risk of contracting the disease. Mr. Duncan's fiancée, Louise Tro, who nursed him in their cramped apartment while he suffered from the disease and who was put under state-ordered quarantine, was set to be declared Ebola-free by officials at the end of Sunday. So too were the paramedics who drove Mr. Duncan to a hospital and healthcare workers who drew or processed his blood. The 21-day monitoring period ended Sunday, and this all happens as the hospital admits that there were very big that they made mistakes, and they were quite upfront in saying that it's clear that we need to modify that protocol where no part of the body is exposed, and so there's some good news and some questioning. Mm-hmm. And question news as far as this. Meanwhile, I think we still have two patients, yes, recovering in the state of, in the state of Atlanta. No, in the state of Georgia.
Right. I don't know what to say to this. It's good news. I'm glad more people are not catching it. It is, again, odd how the nurse got it and the fiance didn't. Just a very strange disease. I think the hospital did what it had to. It was a disaster, and they were up front, so they get some points for that. But that's it. That's all I have.
Well, the hysteria that has been built around this and the impact and how people are politicizing it and using it in the midterm elections really is disgusting. You know, the fact of the matter is that it's a disease. Cuts to the CDC, cuts to other kinds of programs and research programs that would have maybe made us a little bit more prepared are being decried as, you know, the CDC wasn't prepared by the same people who made the cuts. So I find it all very disingenuous from the side of the Republicans.
I do object to the media getting blamed for the hysteria, though. I think a lot of the trouble comes from a very mixed message from our government. No panic, take care, it's hard to get this, but we are closing all the schools in the same state as one potential
government, but it's, these individual governments, and it's interesting to look at, you know, what party controls these governments. And you know, I said this before, and it's been going around Facebook, you know, my heart goes out to the three families of the folks who've been infected and the family of the people who died, you know, but it's three people. We are insane over this, where it took over 20,000 people in this country to die of AIDS before anything was done about it, before President Reagan even uttered the word AIDS or HIV. And I also think that there's this sense, there's a racial component to all of this as well. But, you know, the fact of the matter is three people got infected, over 20,000 people died from AIDS. And where was the outrage for that?
Okay, so you're right.
Yes.
But the question is, well, yes, but you're right, but it's terrible what happened with AIDS. We all know it now. I hope we do. But have we learned anything from the AIDS epidemic that allows us to apply it to this? And if you're suggesting for a single minute, Libby, that we shouldn't be...
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay, so you anticipated my question, right?
I'm not saying that we shouldn't. But the thing is, we did learn from AIDS, and the one thing we learned from AIDS is we need to put money behind research and prevention.
That's right.
And we need to fully fund the CDC and make sure that they and the National Institutes of Health and all those other organizations that do the research, where Fauci is and all these other guys are and women are, and we can't play politics. The one thing we haven't learned is we cannot play politics with health. And health is the number one political issue. We just can't play politics.
I have to say that I was horrified this weekend. I heard Ted Cruz talking about Ebola, and I agreed with him. He is saying that we should stop.
You'll be
okay. I know. I know it. I was shocked, but he made sense. He said, "Look, this is not racism. This is something that the Africans are doing themselves. We do not give visas to people from West Africa who want to come to the U.S. while this crisis is still full blown, which it is right now. Why is that so bad? That makes a lot of sense." The idea is that the guy who came in from Liberia, mm-hmm. he right. went through Brussels, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
So one is like, how can we stop them from coming in? He went through Brussels. No, if he didn't have a visa, he wouldn't have gotten into the U.S. Why is it so bad?
Why is what so bad?
Blocking visas from people in Ebola countries. So that would be right five right now from Western Africa. Blocking them from coming into the U.S. as a way to keep the disease out of the states.
I think in the short term, it's not a bad idea.
Oh, wow. So you agree with Ted Cruz. Isn't this shocking?
Well, I don't know that I agree with Ted Cruz, or maybe he agrees with me. But
that's great.
But I've said this before. I mean, you know, look, there are times when you just have to do something that as it goes down in history, will not be seen as palatable. We've seen it with mm-hmm. Lincoln and ex parte Milligan. We've seen it with the Japanese thing, which was really terrible. That was an awful thing. Roosevelt did it. I don't know what he was responding to. But I think that was terribly different from this. But I think, you know, you shut the doors for a little while. And if it, as in Nigeria or some of these other places, it looks like the thing is abating. Then you open it up
then
again.
You open it again.
Right.
And the Democrats instead are saying, no, no, that's horrible. It won't let in healthcare workers. It'll isolate the problem, which isn't true.
Of course it's not true. You make a special exemption for the healthcare workers.
Yeah. You bring them over in charters, or there's nothing against going into a country. You don't need a visa to the United States to go into Liberia. So, I don't know. I thought here was an area of agreement.
Well, you know, I get where he's coming from, and I can see the short-term sense of it,
yes,
but he also just feeds into the hysteria of all this. But the real question remains, where were our aid dollars going to help stem the tide of this to begin with? we've known that this has been going on for a very long time, and people in the African continent have been dying from Ebola, and we turned a blind eye because
I'm not sure
here.
That's true. We sent a lot of aid over. I think there's difficulty in dealing with the crisis that broke out in the way that it did. But there's difficulty in making
sure the aid gets to where it needs to go. I totally understand that, but I also just think that there is a racial component to this that, as a country, it was over there. And we didn't have to really deal with it over there because it was over there, and it was the people, for the most part, in terms of the people sitting in this room, they don't look like me. They don't sound like me.
Okay, there is a component of over there, but it's the same that we saw in AIDS. Oh, it's them. It's Haitians and gays. That's not me.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
But what? That's human. I don't know that that's some big prejudice against Africans. I think that's a natural thing. Like, okay, I don't have to worry about this. This isn't my problem yet.
Yet. And then when it gets here, everybody goes
worry
hysterical.
About it. Right.
We're going to take a break. I have to say that the hardest that I laughed this weekend was listening to Wait, Don't Tell Me, where Peter Sagal said, it's 24/7 on cable news, even though 2 times more people in this country have been married to Larry King than have come down with Ebola.
That's pretty funny.
One of the funniest lines that I have heard in a very, very long time. We'll take a break. We'll be back after the short break.
That's funny.
Support comes from the office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, Orthodontic, Cosmetic, and General Dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, woodstockdentist.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning, waldorfsaratoga.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan.
Well, we heard from Tony, who said a friend runs a charity in Zimbabwe far from the inflicted areas. At this time every year, he does a tour of mostly schools to raise money for the orphans that his charity helps. So many schools and other organizations have canceled his appearance this year because of Ebola. If we restrict travel, where will this ridiculousness end?
Okay, well, that's stupid. Zimbabwe would
You're calling Tony stupid?
No. The idea that Tony is not stupid. He raises a good point. and I was going to bring up the young man who's a photographer.
Yeah.
Went to Syracuse University. He's been shooting in the Ebola countries. He's been documenting the crisis. And they invited him to come speak at the university.
Right.
Then they disinvited him.
I thought that was bizarre.
He's been exposed. I mean, so you talk about the hysteria. Libya's talking about. Total stupid.
Syracuse disinvited him.
My alma mater. I'm not proud of that.
Wow.
So Matt Mann says, yes, AIDS was the gays problem, and Ebola is in some way Africa's gig. When a rich white person disease breaks, the hysteria and checkbooks will gush forth along with Fox News. Is this another failure by Obama?
Obama gets the blame for that. And anyway, gout was a rich man's disease, and I don't think any checkbooks came flying
Crazy
out
King
for
George
that.
Had that.
Well, what I find interesting as we were talking in the break, that this all came out in Texas. A hospital in Texas, where Texas is known for not wanting any regulations on anything whatsoever. And this is what happens. This is exactly what happens when there's no
oversight.
No oversight, but no goal of
no clear
this
thinking.
This is what we should be doing. This is the height of healthcare. This is the
You don't think this could have happened at any hospital in this country?
Just because it happened in Texas, I mean, they are so famous for not wanting anyone to come in and tell them what to do about anything.
No, that's a good
the
point.
The government.
I mean, yes.
No government oversight.
But I just can't. I can see, given having spent a lot of time in hospitals watching and getting incredible care by incredible individuals. You see the pressures they're under and how things can fall through the cracks.
Sure, but this was an African man coming into a southern hospital with a fever. And I could just imagine what might have gone on in some people's minds. Well, let's send him home.
Well, but he announced where he had been.
Let's send him home because we don't want
to. And now they've had to apologize and apologize and apologize. And someday we ought to do something in which we just talk, Joe, about the necessity to apologize in certain situations. Why are you apologizing? What is it that you are doing? Are you fending off the congressional investigation? Are you fending off? I mean,
well,
it's not about asking for forgiveness, that's for sure.
I think that's it's a really interesting point. I've noticed, and I know we've talked about it on this show, but just in the last week, the president has said that we have botched this twice. The president is getting pretty good at saying, you know, we made a mistake, we made a mistake, we made a mistake. I don't know. Is that good? Is that a good political plan to say, all right, well, we obviously there were problems, obviously we screwed this up, obviously, or do you still want that saying, look, while we're very concerned about the issues that happened, we believe that this is
a profound point, Joe, that you're making, because the Ronald Reagans of this world would probably not be out there apologizing.
No, never.
Jimmy Carter did, and you saw what happened to him.
Right. George W. Bush certainly never apologized.
No, so America, in times of emergency, wants a strong man.
Leadership.
You could call it leadership, and I could call it strong man. Who doesn't see fit to apologize. So,
these are management jobs. When I took over the management of a journalism organization, the outgoing person said to me that here's what you have to do to be successful. You have to learn how to apologize with sincerity, with meaningful words. In many ways, every day you will apologize. It wins people over to your side.
Sure. If you apologize, maybe you get rid of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a strategy. I think it's a strategy.
Well, definitely a strategy.
But you should also, when is a good time to apologize? When you're wrong.
That's a very good time to apologize.
As opposed to when you're not wrong, which some people do.
And in the case of this hospital, everyone in the world knows that they were very wrong.
Can we take a break and come back and get all the letters?
We can.
Excellent. All right. So let's we'll bring more letters in. We welcome yours. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. And then we'll be back and we'll read the letters and we'll get on to other stories. Man, do we have a lot to discuss. We'll be back after the short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. Many, many of you have taken us up on that and have written letters, and we will read those right now.
Okay, so Katie from Poughkeepsie says, Rosemary, I disagree with the notion that suspending visas from Ebola-affected countries will do anything to stop the transmission of the disease. First, every public official, health official of any credibility does not think this is a good idea. Second, will you not allow U.S. citizens who have traveled to Liberia, Guinea, or Sierra Leone to return to the U.S.? The disease doesn't discern citizenship. Rather, this strategy will only fuel further hysteria, xenophobia, and continue othering of people from African countries. Could you imagine our country suspending travel between Germany if they were addressing a public health crisis? Agreeing with Ted Cruz is never a good idea.
I have to agree with that last part. I can imagine doing it if the Ebola were centered in Germany, and American citizens would never be affected. You don't need a visa if you're an American citizen. And in fact, we have brought back Americans who have been infected with Ebola from other countries. So it doesn't affect them.
Yeah. Right. And Don, the great folk singer, says, given our short attention span, Ebola will be but a memory in 1 month, and we will have moved on to the next crisis, in quotes. And then, let's see here. Then Glenn says, did he have health care? And I think the answer to that is, health insurance. I think
he would not have.
He did not.
No.
Okay.
Which is a suspicion that the hospital turned him away or gave him short shrift because he was not an insured patient.
Okay.
Paying patient.
And Walker says we don't always realize that the way we speak about the fear-mongering also incites something. If we refer to someone coming from Western Africa's Ebola horizons, no longer going to speak about the crisis in public setting, we probably should be careful about outrage. Was this young man disinvited or was it rescheduled? That might be what happened. But if
he was disinvited.
Yeah. But if we don't know, it's not right or wise or fair to push the outrage button. Let's be careful not to make assumptions. Learn first, speak later, in parentheses. Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually going to write something about that, so I am trying to learn more about it. Good point.
Okay. So, and then Nick says, I heard the driving motive to send Mr. Duncan home from hospital was financial. He did not have health insurance. Maybe basic lack of geography, education, and current affairs led to the unbelievable miss when he said he was from Liberia. By the way, I'm not so sure that's not right. In other words, I don't know that everybody who works in an emergency room knows where Liberia is.
They pretty much know it's African. He was a dark-skinned black man.
Yes.
So, and he says he's from Liberia. It's more likely that the prejudice will be against the man from Zimbabwe that we got in the earlier note, that he would be held as, oh, you must be West African too.
And Rich says the way the Indians were treated, the 1918 influenza panic, AIDS, Katrina, we allow disaster to happen every day, say we will learn. Wars are another disaster we allow to happen. The attacks against ISIS, someone in the defense industry is making money. Bush 43 was the worst president. He should be forced to help the greater Louisiana area till it is completed. People are still struggling, and that's from Rich. And then Matt says, yes, AIDS was the gays' problem, and Ebola is some faraway African's gig. When a rich white person disease breaks, the hysteria and checkbooks will gush forth. Did we read this?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. And then I think we did.
I think that's it.
No, how about okay. Deborah? Did we read that?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, then we did. I'm so sorry. It's just my addled brain that is.
No, we're good. And you got the ones at the top. You got Ingrid and Ethan?
Oh, Ingrid and Ethan.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ingrid and Lisa.
Well, we got Jules, of course.
Yes.
Doctors Without Borders raised the alarm about the current epidemic in March. The response of the World Health Organization and others was slow and inadequate. And that's from Jules. Ingrid, who you just referred to, says, if you have already mentioned this, then no further need to do so. But please don't forget the incredibly brave and selfless Doctors Without Borders, the many missionary doctors and nurses, and the teams of vaccinators who risk their lives. No racism there.
That's
true. Right. Not everybody.
Amazing.
The same thing. And Ethan says, dear Roundtable, this health problem in West Africa has been going on since February 2014. Doctors Without Borders have been crying for help since April. I remember from watching BBC America when the number of infected persons in Africa was less than 200. Then it went up to 200. The WHO and CDC did not respond then when it was time to do so. The rest of the world not caring because it was them and not us is now coming back to haunt us. A little compassion for, quote, them, as well as having competent persons heading the WHO and CDC responses would have eliminated the hysteria we are now experiencing. Additionally, is Amber Vinson being treated with serum from Dr. Kent Brantley? If not, it will only be the black patients in this country who have not received it.
No, she is.
All right. We thank you very much for your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us go to other issues and a lot of different places we could go, but let's go with the Met Opera story because I just find this fascinating. And a lot been obviously has been written about this over the weekend. The Middle East conflict gets an operatic treatment tonight as the death of Klinghoffer opens at the Metropolitan Opera. Protesters are expected to gather outside Lincoln Center, demanding that the production be canceled. John Adams's 1991 opera tells the story of Leon Klinghoffer, a Jewish American who was kidnapped and killed by Palestinian.
Sorry.
Is that the opera?
Is that the opera?
Yes, it was the. Yes, it is.
Okay, very nice. Protesters are expected to gather. A Jewish, Leanne Klinghoffer, a Jewish American who was kidnapped and killed by Palestinian terrorists aboard the Achille Lauro cruise ship in 1985. Protesters say it is anti-Semitic and glorifies terrorism. Former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, former Governor George Pataki, and two U.S. congressmen are expected to speak outside Lincoln Center, and demonstrators plan to protest.
For or against?
Probably against.
And demonstrators plan to protest in 100 wheelchairs during the performance. Mr. Klinghoffer was a wheelchair user. The general manager of the Met, Peter Gelb, has said the opera may be Mr. Adams's finest work, and the Opera House is promoting the production with the slogan, "See it, then decide."
Well,
I think we have to see it and then decide.
Well, if, as we have read, the attempt on Adams' part was to explain what both sides were experiencing and to be, you know, fair-handed about the Palestinian issue, then we have to, if we accept that as what's going on in this opera, then I understand the idea that pushing a person who cannot use his arms and legs over the side of a ship is just so horrible that it seems to me that there isn't another side when you resort to that. There is, of course, another side, but that isn't the way that you make it the point. It isn't the way you make the point when you slit somebody's throat, which is going on in, which is we see now in the IS. So while I understand it, there is an issue, and I think Rosemary could probably go to this because she is somebody who is always looking for what the prerogatives of the press are, so that now you have a censorship issue. I think Gelb's, the managing guy's father, was the editor
yes,
of the New York Times.
He was.
He was the managing editor.
Managing editor of the New York Times.
Yeah. And he wrote a great memoir.
I haven't read that.
Oh,
yeah,
it's great.
I will.
It really is.
This is art. Get out of it. Artists can do anything they want. I think this is, John Adams is a consummate artist. I wish I had tickets tonight. I'm going to try to get them. I think that the treatment
that
by artists
is,
if I can get them, tickets, I think artists have the right to deal with important issues like this in their work, in their own way. And so do the protesters have a right to go there and protest against it. But in no way should production be stopped.
So one of the things I find interesting about the coverage of this is many are treating it as a new work. This work has been around since 1991. It has appeared over many, many places in Europe with little or no outrage, certainly without cancellation. It premiered in Brussels. It even was at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. There it was greeted with both praise and anger, especially from Klinghoffer's two daughters. So the Met has, we should note also, has canceled the film they were going to do,
yes,
the film showing that they would beam to cinemas across the country.
Right.
They decided to cancel that
the radio.
And the
Why?
Radio. And
Why did they do that?
Because they felt that it could possibly spark protests in overseas.
Well, what about the radio? I mean, you know, I think they were doing their best to minimize it. And Gelb is standing strong, trying to say we're not going to allow ourselves to be censored. But he is.
Good.
And that's what's so interesting.
I feel bad that he stopped it. Of course, protests like this do nothing more than advertise the work. And so more people are likely to see it that might have been otherwise. But, you know, art is, it's not politics. It's outside of the realm of glorifying terrorism or right or wrong. I do not believe, and I also have not seen it, so I guess I need to see it before I decide. But I'm going into it saying I don't believe it does any of those things.
I have a very hard time allowing censorship in the arts because the next people they'll come after is us.
Right.
I mean, I've always felt that way. And, you know, we listen to what Wagner is still, and the Ring Circle cycle is still
terrible anti-Semite.
Right. Anti-Semite, you know, we buy Ford cars and Henry Ford was a horrible anti-Semite.
He was.
But, you know,
good point.
You know, all this other work by people who are anti-Semitic is still played. This is art. I remember the uproar over Robert Mapplethorpe's art.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
I mean, and there was just an article about it in The Advocate, I think, and you know how people got, you know, their knickers in a twist about that. I don't I don't want there to be another venue for anti-Semitism in this country, but I also think that we can't be on the side of censorship. And you know, people need to have conversation. They need to talk about this. They need to recognize what happened. This isn't the same as all the anti-Semitism that got riled up in bombing synagogues in Europe this summer. It's not.
And Eric says,
thank you. Yes, it's censorship is censorship, and we have to really fight against it, because I really believe the next people will come after is us.
That's good.
And Eric says, don't like art, don't attend. Want to protest? Sure. But tell me you have seen it or read or heard it before making your decision. That's from Eric.
Good, very good point. I do have to get tickets.
Through November 15th, I believe.
Okay.
So let us know.
Okay. I'll report back.
Yes. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from the Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley. Garth Nix will sign and discuss Clariel, the fourth book in the Old Kingdom series, Wednesday, October 29th at 7 p.m. OdysseyBKS.com. Hampshire Veterinary Hospital, corner of University Drive and Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts, reminding listeners that black pepper-like specks in pets' coats indicate the presence of fleas, hampvet.com. And Woodstock School of Art, with year-round classes and workshops for all levels, and scholarship programs for area high school students and adults, woodstockschoolofart.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A newly created database of New Yorkers deemed too mentally unstable to carry firearms has grown to roughly 34,500 names, a previously undisclosed figure that has raised concerns among some mental health advocates that too many people have been categorized as dangerous. The database, established in the aftermath of the mass shooting in 2012 at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, and maintained by the State Division of Criminal Justice Services, is the result of the SAFED Act. It is an expansive package of gun control measures that obviously went through the administration of Governor Cuomo. The law, better known for its ban on assault weapons, compels licensed mental health professionals in New York to report to the authorities any patient likely to engage in conduct that would result in serious harm to self or others.
I think we should err on the side of caution. 35,000 is not a lot of people out of the entire state population. I think it could be higher, and we're not going to really risk hurting too many constitutional rights here. Don't you?
Yes. I don't think people should have guns.
I know. Well, other than soldiers.
That's an issue.
Period.
We all agree with that.
End of story.
At least the people in this room do.
Right.
But we do admit there's a constitutional right to bear arms.
No. There's a constitutional right to have an arm and a militia.
Well, according to yes, I agree. That's where it comes
down.
Well, no. But the difference between what Rosemary just said, which is what the Supreme Court says, and what you said, which is what I believe, is a different story. But
the law of the land is the right to bear arms.
Yeah. Look, I wrote my doctoral dissertation in this area, the politics of mental health. I did, and I know what they're worried about. They are worried about the fact that the mentally ill, or people who have been accused of being mentally ill, are stigmatized, and that this is one more way in which, you know, you say, okay, you've got the black mark on your forehead which says you can't hold a gun because, you know, you're mentally ill. Now, I get that. I understand it. I'm not sympathetic in that I think the more people who are on the list, the better off. But I do understand what they're talking about.
Can I ask a question about liability? But
sure.
Because by doing this,
sure.
I mean, if you miss somebody, or even if you say,
and I'm just looking at what happened in Texas of how easy things can fall through the cracks.
Sure.
So somehow one of these 34th, then you're screwed, right? I mean, then you're in real trouble. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If the person was on the list, then they have some black mark and they say, okay, well, they were on this list and they still got a gun and look what happened. And then if they're not on the list, why was this person on the list? Well, this person wasn't. I don't know. I just am curious as to how you then go the next step.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I think that's part of what's on their minds. However, you know, we see it. We see no-fly zone. Remember that? No-fly mm-hmm. list.
No-fly list.
And all of a sudden, Teddy Kennedy couldn't get on a plane because Teddy Kennedy's name was on the list. We don't hear much about the who can't fly list anymore, but it was the same thing. And with the same rationale you're talking about, Joe.
How are you not on a no-fly list?
I think it's
list,
a really, I know, it's so odd. So far, no problems. I think that, though, it's a good effort. And as for stigmatizing the mentally ill, I do not believe that clown in Aurora, Colorado, and he's come to court with, you know, he looks like literally a clown, or the disturbed young man in Newtown. They've not done a whole lot for the image of the mentally ill either.
I don't think
anyone thinks that everybody's like that, but an effort to prevent that sort of thing, to keep guns out of the hands of people who really ought not to have them.
Yeah.
Mistakes will be made, but I think it's a good effort. I'm glad that they're doing
that. I think the most important thing here is we're not all saying that these people are going to walk into crowded movie theaters either for their own safety.
Well, then there's another issue.
For their own safety.
Then there's another issue. Who gets on the list? So in other words, is anybody who's ever seen a therapist get on the list? Is anybody
anybody who hasn't seen a therapist? I mean,
which allows them to pick and choose. It's not easy.
Well, no one thinks the list is going to be inclusive or perfect. I mean, if you think that, then you're going to be disappointed.
Well, if you're the one who gets on for some spurious reason, and other people don't get on. You have a right to be a little bit ticked off, don't you?
Well, isn't there an appeals process? Just as there isn't a no-fly list? I got on them. This is incorrect. Fix it.
Well, there is Kenneth Glatt, who's the commissioner for mental hygiene in Dutchess County, said, because he gets the list, the county officials, sometimes they call them county health officials. It's really county mental health folks. Carefully scrutinized every name that was sent to him through the SAFE Act, and then realized he was just a middleman, and so occasionally now he checks the list. But, I think that these people should not have access to guns, just like you and I agree. Nobody should have access to guns.
Right.
But, you know, the fact is that you're now putting this responsibility on an already overtaxed county mental health system that don't have the resources because they keep getting cut. And then where's the liability here? What happens if somebody doesn't make it on the list or somebody is on the list who shouldn't be on the list? I mean, we are now,
I don't
this,
know what the process right. is. Like, if I want to put somebody on the list, this guy's crazy. Don't give him a gun, my children, whatever. Well, where do I go? How does that happen?
Local frontline mental health workers feel compelled to routinely report any mentally ill patients brought to an emergency room by the police or ambulances. Hmm. County health officials are then supposed to vet each case before it's sent to Albany. Can you imagine? County health departments are being cut.
Well, I don't think they should be cut, but 35,000 is not a lot of cases statewide.
It's a lot if you're one of them.
Well, that's right. And here is a number that was previously – I was wondering exactly what giving the number out does.
Makes you see how many people are not allowed to have guns in New York.
Right. The law gives the county officials responsibility of reviewing the reports for mental health workers. That's supposed to provide another layer of oversight.
So you have 35,000 overall. How many are going to protest the right not to bear arms? So I don't know that it's a tremendous uptick in the amount of work anybody has to do.
I'm still concerned about the stigma issue.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's the one thing here that has always upset me.
Except these people have to go into the system. They have to go into the mental health system. They already have the stigma.
Yep.
They
that,
already.
That doesn't do
I'm it concerned me. About it's first try, graders dying in they, Newtown. And I don't, I mean, I think I'm becoming Ted Cruz. Oh, my gosh. I would not give visas to people who come from Ebola hotspots.
I'm concerned
and
about
And I don't know why people who are possibly unable to deal with guns, I don't mind keeping it out of their hands.
I'm concerned that there is an 18-year-old kid who has mental issues, who's concerned about whatever is going on in his life and is thinking about taking his life. And if his name is on that list and it protects him from getting a gun to take his own life, then I don't know. Or
to shoot up his classmates.
Well, I mean, the fact is you have to take care of the patient.
Right, but you know, this also gives us a false sense of security. Oh, somebody's on the list, they're not going to get a gun, and we all know that that's not true.
Well, that's true. Well, that's what I was saying earlier. You know, what's the next step?
Right.
We're out of time. We will talk about money, more of these topics, and all kinds of other good stuff next time. Alan, Rosemary, Libby, thank you very much. We'll be back. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.